Hey everyone, it's Tronster here in the basement for the Basement Game Dev Podcast. I have my co-host Brett on the sofa next to me. And also I have three fantastic game developers, and they're here to go and talk about women in game development today. I'll let them introduce themselves, say who they are, and where they work at.
My name is Brianna, and I am a effects artist at ZeniMax Online Studios.
My name is Michelle Menard. I'm a systems designer at Zynga East and the author of Game Development with Unity.
And I'm Taylor Fisher. I'm a concept artist at Fraxis Games.
And I cannot stress enough, if you have an Amazon account, you should get on there right now and look for that Game Development in Unity book by Michelle. Buy it now, learn Unity, and then buy another copy for someone on Christmas. It's only in 3 months, and they'll get a lot out of it. I want to give a quick shout-out to the Indie Game House. It's another podcast at indiegamehouse.com. A few CAs I know, Kyle Pulver, Corey Noland, and Steve Swink run it, as well as another CA who I forgot to write down in my text file. And they talk about video games and some video game development. Also, a shoutcast to Showtime, who's driving around and he needs podcasts to keep him from going insane. Hey, Showtime. And Dave Reichle, who is a new podcast listener, and even though he's not a game developer, maybe he'll learn something. We're sad that we cannot be joined by Gabe Pendleton. He is not here for this recording, but he is gracious enough to let us host us on BaltimoreGamer.com. And as always, our audio engineer is Brian Lee. Hoo-ah! In the background, making sure we sound great. So we've met everyone. Let's just right to the topic, which is about women in games. And a question that helps lead into this topic, it was brought up by a Redditor, Applezor. How would you guys pronounce Applezor?
Applezor.
Applezor. Applezor. Redditors have the awesomest Applezor names, and I just can't, but I can't pronounce them. And he said, and I'll read quote for quote, the grammar might be a little off, but what was it like starting out, and how did you make get into a studio?
Make getting is actually pretty hard, especially into a studio. But at least for me, I mean, when I was starting out, I mean, this was way back in ye olden times, and I mean, I played Super Mario Brothers, Super NES, Super Mario World, super hooked. I decided I wanted to work in games, and I really like drawing pictures too, right? So these things went together. So when it was time to go to college, I mean, I love drawing, so I went to an art school. It was also a game development school. Pretty much while I was still in school, I was always drawing, I was always working really hard, and you know, like I said, I'm an effects artist, so art is my focus. But even then, when I was in school, my professors told me, you know, oh, you should be making films, you know, you shouldn't be making games. And I told them, what? I thought I was at a game school. I went to DigiPen. I'll say that. I mean, it's on my LinkedIn, and you guys can internet stalk me if you want. So it's a game development school. And so in my spare time, little spare time I had, I mean, I swear we were doing like 70, 80 hour weeks there. Like all the time. That's what art school is. It's figure drawing, more figure drawing, painting, you know, 3D. And Taylor next to me, she's also an artist. She's, yes, thumbs up. Yes, completely.
Art happens.
Art happens. So on top of that, you know, I was also working with programmers, working with designers, trying to figure out game engines, trying to figure out how exactly do I get my 3D art asset into the game. It turns out that was, you know, really, really beneficial. I mean, I learned content pipelines. I learned how to work with designers. I learned all these words that they use, like quaternions. I mean, that's a word, and it means something. Yeah. So anyway,
have any of you read the Quaternion and Matrix FAQ?
No.
My husband did his master's on quaternions.
Oh, sweet. They're cool. I actually have credits on the FAQ. It's my one claim of fame. So.
Wow.
Sorry, quick aside. I just wanted to toot my own horn. Keep going. It's all you. It's all you.
Anyway, I had all these student games, and my first student games were horrible. I mean, we made one that was like about these little origami animals, and it just looked really bad. And like I learned a lot about how to not make a game. And then my second project, it was a bit better, but, you know, I kind of took more away from what not to do. I mean, my first couple projects were not, I wouldn't call them successes, but learning experiences, you know? if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, by my senior year, I got together with a bunch of people who, you know, they were pretty good with about what they did, and you know, I had some pretty good games to show from it. So I went into this interview, and I got rejected from a lot of places, like, you know, applying for internships. I got rejected so many times. Like, I can't even count how many times I got rejected. I mean, you will get rejected a lot. Anyway, I went into this interview, and I showed them my games, and they liked it, and they gave me an internship. So, I mean, that's really how you make Git, is that you work really, really hard, and you make games. I mean, just go out and make games. You don't have to... I mean, you can be indie. Just kind of learn how to do it. And I know that sounds really dumb, but, like... You know, start off, like, try making a mod, like, learn Unity, go buy a book about Unity, and...
Thank you.
Buy a book that Michelle wrote about Unity.
I hear there's a really good one you can get on Amazon. But just go out and just, you know, learn everything you can. And talk to game developers. I mean, they're really mm-hmm. helpful people. Like, we... You know, you can email us and we'll tell
we're
you anything that we can without getting us fired, you know? I mean... Anyway, I rambled. Go ahead, guys.
I guess my get in the video game industry, it's kind of weird. Again, it's kind of a tangent story, I guess. I originally actually started out as a fine arts painter. I thought I was going to make, you know, gallery art for a really long time. And then kind of my sophomore year of college, I realized I really like making dragons and stuff. And I have a really short attention span. And I'm also really fascinated by science and a lot of this kind of technical work. And so I kind of slowly developed into this weird comic artist and then realized... I don't have the patience for that, and I also wanted to make slightly more money than a comic book artist. I mean, concept art, you know, it's not super, you know, you're not gonna be particularly rich by the end of it, I don't think. But I realized, you know, short attention span, I can draw pretty quick, I love science, concept art is a pretty good thing to do. And I kind of just went headlong into it and ended up really, you know, searching out my connections, talking to people, meeting people. Again, I think, you know, I was telling a couple of people about practicing strong handshakes. I mean, you know, I wanted to make good impressions. I mean, I'm one of those people who will stand in a mirror and, you know, repeat, you know, hello, my name is so-and-so. And it sounds really cliche, but, you know, I need a little
bit of... But it worked, right?
It worked. It ended up working. People, I have a very sturdy handshake now. You know, a memorable handshake. But really what it was is, you know, kind of as a concept artist, it was my love of science and technical work and understanding how things work. Because in order as a concept artist for you to make new things, you need to have a very strong base to understand how the world works. And so kind of my love of art history and ancient cultures and things like that ended up developing to this group of sketches of Assyrian and Babylonian homes that Fraxis saw, and then ended up getting me a job working on Civilization 5, which I didn't know they were working on. And it was kind of a weird, you know, I will say it's a little bit of luck. It's definitely luck included.
Yeah.
But it was definitely still having a passion for the creation process as a concept artist that let me kind of develop that into my concept job, and persistence. And you know, I knew I wanted to do concept work, and I went to a lot of open houses. I spoke to a lot of art directors. I spoke to a lot of developers. And every time they told me no or told me that something wasn't good enough, I asked them why. And that's a really big part of it, is asking them, you know, why do you say no? What can I do better? Where can I take this? And then remembering those people and coming back, you know, 2 months, 6 months, a year later if needed, and showing them how much you've developed. Because I've had a lot of people say they've hired me, you know, or given me work, whether it's freelance or full-time or internship work, because they see how much my work has developed since then. Because you're not taking the work you have and you're not sticking with it and being like, oh, I'm happy with where I'm at. I don't need to do better. There's always a better space to go. So it's taking critique, being persistent, always growing, taking all of that feedback and working with it. And that has really helped me just as a concept artist, as an artist, as a person, develop in kind of the games industry. So from school to work.
Let's see. I started out a little bit differently where, I mean, growing up, I always played lots of games. We were a very game-friendly house. We played lots of board games, lots of card games. I mean, I bought a Nintendo with my own money when I was 6 because, like, I needed this thing. But it never occurred to me that people built these things for a living, that they had to come from somewhere, not just the ether. So it never really dawned on me that this was a job you could do. I'm like, and I built games from when I was little. I entered competitions in 4-H for board games and like won prizes with it. But it was just still never hit my, you know, entered my mind that you can continue to do this as a living.
4-H had competitions?
They do. They have tons. Oh my God. I could talk to you about those.
Okay.
But so when I went to college, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to be a mathematician and a musician. I really thought I wanted to do music and I wanted to do opera singing. Don't. God damn it. Small industry. You think the games industry is small? Wait till you go to musical entertainment. It's even smaller. So, you know, senior year, panicking, can't find a job, can't find an in, and I needed an extra CS credit for my math program, so I took a computer graphics program in the CS department. Sucked at the art, but it kind of opened up. I was like, wait a minute. There's a field here. There's a field that does graphics, a field that does games. Holy shit, have I missed out? So after that, I applied to an MFA program down in Georgia at the Savannah College of Art and Design, where they do game development, game design, MFAs, and I went down there and met Brenda Brathwaite, now Brenda Garno, who was my thesis advisor. And it was basically through her that, you know, you started to network. I started to meet all these people in the industry, like Andrew Greenberg, Barry Cotto, who got me my first job. And it's through networking in a lot of ways that I actually, you know, made connections and found openings and positions and kind of got into the industry. Because, you know, you can have very strong portfolios and very strong resumes. But, you know, when you apply to jobs, sometimes there's 100 other applicants with you, and it's very hard to get lost in the shuffle. So if they know your name, if they even just recognize your name, they're more often to move your name to the top of the pile. So it's very important to, like, make that really strong connection with people out in the industry and network. And through there, you can oftentimes find a job. Like, I got my first job through Barry at Firaxis because I had met him through Brenda. And it's, I can't stress it enough that network, 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 network.
And I'll throw this out for the listeners, a disclaimer I throw out there that I may say something chauvinistic, I may say something sexist on here, and I think I've been safe so far tonight. If I do say something wrong, guys,
we'll beat him up, don't worry.
Okay, very good. I'm trying to think of the point that you meant about the networking and about the guys and girls and, you know, getting out there, and I don't know, I'm not saying this too eloquent, but like a lot of guys really F up when they go out there, just shove a resume in the face. You know, I'll go out to some event that has a bunch of students there and be like, hey, it's great to see you guys, and they're like, hey, you should hire me, here's my resume. Do you have any perception of guys approaching industry vets, people in the industry, different than women, that women may be a bit more tactful on this, or do you think it's the same across the board?
I have met plenty of socially awkward women in my time. I don't think you see them as much in the industry because they don't get hired necessarily. But at least when I was in school, the school I went to, it's not really fair to compare to normal colleges. I mean, it was literally like, you know, 9 out of 10 people were male. But that's not to say that there weren't awkward women there too. I kind of feel like games in general, it's kind of this place where lots of people feel safe. I mean, there are socially awkward people here, because they feel accepted here. So I don't think women are necessarily better at approaching recruiters and handing their resumes off. It's just that, you know, the women that actually have resumes built up have them because they're not the socially awkward ones that kind of fall between the cracks, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah. It might actually fall into more like Taylor actually taking the time to practice the handshake. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe some guys do that, but I think most guys probably do not. That's kind of awesome. You actually would spend the effort to do that.
I do. I feel like a little insane. I think, I mean, but I actually think this is a weird side comment. I think you have to be like a little bit crazy to be a concept artist, but
yes.
or to be in game development. I think you have to be like a little on the nutty side, because if you aren't, I mean, it makes you a little less memorable. And I taught a class down at MICA, and one of kind of the ending comments that we left with was that you need to be personable. You really do need to understand that your ability to articulate your ideas and your concepts to other people is really important. And whether or not that's men or women who are better at it, being able to share your ideas, to be personable, to resolve conflict, to take critique, to build on other people's ideas, to support others on your team, it's a really big part of game development. And I told people, you know, a lot of time when I grade people in my class on participation, I'm not grading them just for saying, like, I don't like purple. And, you know, that's your participation grade for the class grade. It's participation in the sense that you are willing to engage the rest of the world in a discussion about the art that's going on, about the game development that's going on, and about the different concepts. Because that's really, really important. And that's part of the games industry, and that's what's going to let people remember you, is your personality, your enthusiasm, whether or not you're practicing your handshakes, how you introduce yourself to others, your loves, your passions. You should be able to get people excited about whatever you're excited about, or be able to join others in that excitement and help lift that to something else. Because the games industry, it's such a small, tight group, and it's honestly, you know, it is a small group of 40 to 60 people. I mean, I've had teams working on games, it's 5 to 10 people at the most. And you have no room for people who don't have enthusiasm for the things that they love. And when you go to recruiters or you go to, like, network or meet up with these people, like, showing your love and passion for that work is really important. So yeah, just shoving your resume doesn't show your love. Mm-hmm. For something, and that sounds really cliche, but it's really important.
And that's why I wonder whether or not it is cliche. And I'll turn to Brett, who I will say is like our resident dude. just in general, you know, Brett, do you find that to be cliche at all? I mean, do you find there's any gender bias there to whether it's men or women, or what have you observed whenever you've gone to any of these events and you've come across indies or students who are men versus women?
I think it's more noticeable in men just because there are so many more men at the events. But typically the one line that gets used a lot is when I'm talking to somebody for the first time and I ask them, you know, like, hey, my name is Brett. I work at Day One Studios, and they'll respond with their name. And their first line for what they do is, I'm looking for a job. And I get that from guys and girls. And, you know, sometimes there will be some of both that don't say that, but that's, like, the number one line, like, as an introduction. And so I think it's not gender specific, but that's a line that I get a lot, you know, in talking with students in indies and things like that.
And with at least being a woman, it's like, there aren't as many of us, but the same could be said as any minority, so you are more memorable just for that reason alone, for good or ill. I mean, it's not just because you made an impression on the person that's necessarily a good thing. You could be one of the people who are like, oh my god, you remember that person? But, you know, so it's, networking isn't, yeah, just shoving a resume, being like, hey, I'm looking for a job. It's about forming those soft connections and, like, you know, being interested in what that person does and in the industry. So if you know someone's going to be speaking at a convention or at a panel, do some research. Look to see who they are. Look to
research
see what they
huge.
Did.
Yeah,
and then when
is.
You go introduce yourself, be like, hi, this is my name, this is what I do. By the way, what you did on blah project, blah, you know, this is my, you know, this is what I think about it, or I'm really impressed that you did this. Show some interest in them, and they'll be much more inclined to continue the conversation with you. That's networking. It's not just like, here's my business card. See ya.
That's a super important kind of side note for people who are looking to get into art in video games. If you're going to build a portfolio, research the people that you're going to an open house for, or the people that you're going to meet. Understand what kind of games they make, and don't be afraid to tailor your portfolio to that. If you don't tailor your portfolio to that studio, you're just giving them things that don't mean anything to them.
Yeah, if you're going to be applying at a AAA studio, don't come up with a portfolio that's full of, like, anime or whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
unless you want to work in Japan.
It's nice to have one or two pieces to demonstrate you have versatility, but don't just...
Yeah.
This is guys or girls, right?
This
is gender neutral, either way.
But yeah, tailor your portfolio, and don't, you know, don't bring in, like, everything you've done since kindergarten. take your top 10 to 15, no more than 15, or our eyes will bleed out of our skull, and we'll be like, tired and bored because you're the 60th person we've talked to, but and be confident. Don't down talk yourself. That's another thing I run into. People who talk to me about wanting to be a concept artist, they're like, oh, but I'm not that good, but I don't know how I feel about it. I don't really feel like I'm going anywhere. And I'm like, I don't want to work with you.
That's what I remember. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, you're horrific. You're like, and that's a horrible thing to say, but nobody wants a Debbie Downer. Like, really, it's a
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. You're going to shoot yourself down. Like, confidence, be assured, be knowledgeable, build your portfolio to who you're meeting, understand what they do. I mean, when I was doing the Civ 5 stuff, like, I knew they, you know, that's the studio, they've done Civilization before, so show them isometric drawings of buildings from this perspective. I understand what they're looking for.
Yeah, you know? I remember actually looking at your portfolio when we were looking for artists to hire. I was like, hey, we need people to do these businesses. So meeting with the art director, look at this person. This is fantastic.
Yeah, show them what they want. Show them that you can do it without them needing to spoon feed you.
Very good. So let's say you get in, like you, let's say particularly for women, you are in the industry. Are there any issues once you've gotten past that whole interview process? You are a full-time dev. Like, what do women have to be where they may come across while they're in their day-to-day job?
Well, I mean, this is a, I mean, I'm a huge, like, I can talk again, like, the millions of years about feminist theory and the stuff that women have to deal with. And it's weird talking about women as a minority. See, I think currently we're 52% of the world's population, so we're slightly higher, but there's still this culture of, around women and dealing with women. And there's definitely a disparity between, like, the way women and men are treated in the work industry.
What do you say your the ratio is at at Firaxis, like men to women?
At Firaxis, well, we have a handful of people. There's Britt, there's Whitney, me.
There's a few, but it's like, I mean, out of 30 or so, or one out of 10.
I would say one out of 20.
One out of 20. Okay. How about?
I think the proportion's better at ZeniMax. Like ZeniMax it feels pretty good. Yeah, it feels more like one out of five. I'd say.
Yeah, one out of five.
One out of five.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Between 5 and 8, yeah. But like, I have a lot of female coworkers, mm-hmm. and there's some women, and I don't even know what their names are, what department they walk in. I just see them at lunch.
That is rare.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Special.
well, our studio is also huge. That so is true. That helps.
Because I remember when I started at Firaxis originally, it was Britt and I were the only two female devs mm-hmm. in the entire company.
Well, you also had, you know, Kelly, executive director, and you had Joanne, and you had Donna.
Yes, there were other women in the mm-hmm. office, but as far as like on the development team, who you work with day to day, but there were two of us. And at Zynga, I think we're probably about 10% in our studio. It's slightly higher at other studios, give or take, but I think mm-hmm. we're about 10%.
Oh yeah, I neglected to include QA. QA is there's definitely a higher proportion.
We're all dudes.
Well, I mean, there's also old people. That's also really interesting. I feel like I'm really sorry for saying that, but I mean, I'm really young. But I mean, people over 30. No, I mean, that's true. QA. There's that actually a really high proportion. I think that's really interesting. But QA, there's also more women, which I think is really interesting. Younger and older women. As far as artists, I think it's at Firaxis, it's me and one other artist that are female.
Whitney. Yeah. I think there's one more. I'm blanking on names right now. While I try to think of the name, I'll quickly take
attention
away.
I'm a bad person for forgetting them. Sorry.
Over to Brett in day one.
The first 3 years I was at day one, we didn't have a woman in the Hunt Valley office.
Whoa.
We were all guys.
That's crazy.
And now that we're down low in staff, we have 9 people currently in the Hunt Valley office, and one of which is a woman. She's not a dev, but there's one woman of the 9 of us that are there.
When I talk about women in Firaxis, I mean, I usually include like the dev people. I know we have Kelly and Sean and HR.
Stephanie also.
Oh, that's right, Stephanie. That's who it is.
I saw the face and I'm like, oh, I don't talk to her every day, but yeah, she's awesome.
See, thing. Like me and Stephanie, we're not girls. We play Warhammer together, so I don't think
you
that...
play Warhammer.
I play Warhammer Fantasy. Okay. I do.
That's a whole.
You can fight my Bretonian army anytime.
I don't know what that is.
So that's one of the many human races in fantasy.
It's okay. Good. That's all you need to know.
So one of the things I really like about being on the effects team at ZeniMax is that we have a 50-50 gender ratio. There's 4 of us,
mm-hmm.
and there's 2 women and 2 men, and that's actually really cool.
That's really rare.
I can't really say that for the rest of the art department. I think that it's just kind of a cool thing. But mm-hmm. I mean, there's plenty of plenty of women about, and you know, I mean, some of them are really cool, and you know, some of them like I don't get along with as well, but I mean, that's any office, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I will say working at big huge games, that was really interesting because concept teams are notoriously tiny. A lot of time I've worked on projects where I was the only concept artist. Because like really your entire job is to generate ideas, and a good concept artist can generate ideas for the majority of the project. So you kind of max out at this, you know, mass of four people. And I worked on a concept team that was two women and two men. I'd never worked with a female concept artist before, and it was the best thing on the planet. It was amazing because, I mean, you know, concept stage is when you have that, you know, costume design phase, and that's the notoriously sexist zone of, you know,
boobs
of, you know, character creation. That's very, it's, you know, that's the radioactive, that's the dangerous, you put on, you know, the hazmat suit to go into that shit. So but that, yeah, that was really interesting. That was a big huge games. Big huge games had a particularly large portion of women to men, I think, for the games industry, before of course it snapped in half like the Titanic and sank into the ocean. So.
But a bit of a phoenix rose from it. I'll look the positive.
This is
side.
True. Yes, yeah, true. Epic Baltimore.
Yes.
Impossible Studios.
Yes. Bear unicorn Pegasus thing.
Standing on top of the day one logo.
You don't want to scare like women away. There are women in the industry, and it is getting better over the years. I mean, the numbers are improving. And just because you hear 2%, 5%, 10%, it's, you know, you should still
join
if you want to work in games.
Do
and
it.
Don't be like, because you could see that across like any tech industry. Yes, I mean the numbers are slightly lower, but that shouldn't, you know, dissuade you from joining because you want to.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, kind of rounding back to what Tronster was asking originally with the question, you know, stuff going in for women in the industry. There are, again, like, there are awesome stories. Like, getting to work on a 50-50 men-women concept team is probably, like, one of my favorite things about being in the industry and getting to enjoy that time where I feel like it was an unbiased discussion every day, and it was great. And we felt like I was building games, you know, that were exactly what I wanted out of kind of a creative team. But there are also kind of like horror stories in that situation. Like as a woman, because you are a very small portion, shit does happen, and it's horrible sometimes. I mean, I know I had someone taking pictures of me from a mirror in my office while I wasn't looking. And people who would, like, purposefully harass me. I mean, other studios, I had someone tell me that women can't have sex like men and birth control pills should be illegal. Or people would wait until everyone had left the office to ask me about lingerie and really horrible, like, awkward. Like, you don't ask you those kinds of questions. You know, it's just not okay. You just don't do it. And there are horror stories like that. And some studios, because there is a proportion, like, a very small portion of the studio who is female, don't know how to deal with situations like that. And I've had HR that has dealt with those kinds of things perfectly, hands down, have done an excellent job, made me feel safe, made me feel valued, and have done a great job with that. And then, of course, because, you know, places don't know how to deal with that because it's never been an issue, don't deal with it properly. And that is a problem that as a woman going into the industry, you do have to be careful of. You do have to be mindful of. Of course, you know, don't stop being a lady. Like, you know, there's no problem.
And, you know,
with
be
it.
Aware, but don't just assume just because a dude's paying attention to you that he's harassing you either.
Exactly.
Like, don't demonize them. It's
yeah.
Not,
yeah, for the most part, dudes are your ally.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of allies. Like, 99.9% of the time, they're your allies. But there are assholes who think it's okay to hug you.
Oh, yeah.
Or tickle you at work. This is bad shit. Don't do
boundaries.
It.
Boy, there are douchebags and nice guys in every single industry. It's not just like, you know, gay industry tracks all the creeps. No, it's not true. But I mean, like, granted, I've had a woman who would hug people from behind out of, like, nowhere. You're like, not okay. And that was a lady doing
and
it. It's not just guys.
And it's never okay. And that's the thing is that it's weird, and a lot of times you don't know how to handle it because you're like, wait a minute.
Well, with that, it's like, you know, don't be quiet because you're like, oh, God, who am I going to tell? They're going to laugh at me. No, I mean, if you have an issue with someone, go talk to HR.
Exactly.
Yeah, go talk to someone. Tell the person you were not okay with it. Don't just sit there and take it.
Yeah, for sure. I think it also depends on the climate of the studio. I mean, I've been really lucky to work at two really big studios so far, and they've both had, you know, excellent HR departments for me. And, you know, one like small startup where like everyone was super chill and wore leather jackets and smoked and drank all the time, and it was awesome. And we had beer 30 on Fridays, and we called it beer, it was 5:30, and so that's when the beer came out, and it was great. But, you know, I mean, like,
you had to wait that long?
Yeah, it was kind of late. Well, we were working pretty late on that project. Anyway, but, you know, I mean, on the other hand, I mean, I've gone into interviews at game companies, and in the interview, I've had them ask me things like, so, do you mind kind of like a sarcastic, joking work environment? And I'm like, well, I guess that, you know, depends on what that means. And, you know, having the interviewer say, oh, well, you know, this is an all-male game dev team, and, you know, they like to make rape jokes and that kind of thing. I mean, are you gonna say something about that? I mean, am I gonna have to, I don't want to fill out paperwork. And I'm just thinking to myself in my head, you know, oh, poor you, having to fill out paperwork instead of having to sit in a hostile work environment. At the time, I mean, I was unemployed, so I was like, yeah, that's fine.
Rape jokes are not okay.
Yeah.
Making fun of any minority is not okay. I've seen the same thing happen to, like, you know, some of the gay guys in the industry. They get harassed by some of the coworkers. You're like, that's not okay either.
Is not okay.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
If you are uncomfortable, something is not okay.
Exactly. Work regardless. Should be comfortable for everybody, regardless yeah. of, you know, who they are. And, yeah. I mean, you know, homophobia, transphobia, and also just, you know, being... having your coworkers around you making uncomfortable lady jokes all the time. I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like if I'm going to work someplace that they should, you know, try to accommodate me mm-hmm. a bit, you know, mm-hmm. and make it so that I like going to work mm-hmm. in the morning. I mean, I don't want to roll out of bed and think, oh, great, I have to go back with, you know, all those assholes yeah. in the office. And
yeah.
I mean, if you stop going to work, then you're not going to last long in the game industry because the game industry is brutal. Mm-hmm. The pay is not mm-hmm. that great. The hours are, well,
mandatory
really bad.
Overtime.
Mandatory overtime forever. You know, yeah. and you know, if you don't like going to work, then that's just going to kill your career. It's not good yeah. for you, and it's not good for the
too.
Project.
Yeah.
This is kind of like a side note, too. I really appreciate Tronster kind of coming out and talking about, you know, if he does make sexist comments. This is kind of like a thing for dudes in the industry. It's totally okay to be like, whoops, I was just sexist. Or, whoops, I was just racist.
We appreciate that. That's
it's good.
Awesome.
Because even as women, like, women are not
We're not perfect.
I do sexist shit all the time. And that's the thing. It's a cultural thing. It's stuff that you get over. I mean, it's not easy to get over. People slip up. But the biggest part is, like, men who are like, oh, my God, am I being sexist? Like, I'm being paranoid. I have some dudes that, you know, I've said a couple times, like, ooh, you should be careful. That's sexist. And they flip out. And I'm like, no. I'm letting you know. Because I care. I mean, I could just disregard you as a human being and be like, oh, I'm not going to say anything whatsoever. But, I mean, being okay and accepting that and having it as an open discussion and knowing that it's okay to be wrong, it's like going back to the art critique thing. Critique is good. Critique is constructive. Like, take it. Like, don't be afraid to be like, is that okay? Like, if you're nervous about something being sexist, I mean, it's not wrong to walk up to a woman and be like, is this sexist? Like, it's letting us be aware of that kind of stuff, too, is a good thing. Like, you, it's totally okay to be like, I don't know if these booby size are, like, is this sexist? I don't know how I feel about this. I'm not a woman, so I don't know.
And yeah, get perspective.
It's okay. We're not going to be like, oh, goodness.
I think that should be the overall mantra from this podcast is get perspective.
Perspective.
You know, yeah.
It's good.
It's good. All right. I want to thank everyone. We're out of time. Unfortunately, I would like to keep this going for a while, but I have to go and shut it down. So I want to go and thank Brianna, and I want to go and thank Taylor and Michelle for being here. I want to go and thank Brian for all the fiddling with the knobs on the mixer board, and Brett for keeping me in check doing that. This is Tronster signing off from the basement from the Basement Game Dev Podcast. Until next month. Cheers.